I want to read a little review here from JSPAC, which was added to iTunes on July 28th, 2018. A five-star review, by the way. It says, "Great podcast. Keep sharing your tips, and thank you for making the show. A request. Please talk about using Chase Ultimate Rewards Portal for buying flights versus transferring to partner airlines and other tips you have on redeeming miles and points." I love reviews like this because, well, one, it's a five-star review, but also because it lets me know what you want to hear, and I'm all for that, as long as what you want to hear isn't less of me. Here we go. Hey everyone, welcome to the Travel Fanboy Podcast. I'm Adam, your host, and we are back in my noisy, I'm not going to call it a high rise, but a floor that's, I'm higher up than normal. I usually do these recordings and in a more central location, and so I can never really tell if the sound that's going on outside is going to actually make it into the recording, but I think what's next on my list is finding a quiet place, possibly a studio, where I can record the show, and to ensure that the sound quality, at least from an outside perspective, is as good as possible. We're going to get to the points and miles convo in a second. The review left earlier, we're definitely going to be basing this episode around that. But first, I wanted to thank a couple people. One, thank you to Bryce for the absolutely insane Karma donation for his upcoming trip. All Karma donations to me come with a money-back guarantee. If you donate to the show and you don't win, I suggest putting money back into the machine, whatever machine that you're playing. It works every time. So I think that's how guarantees work. Also, thank you to the Patreon Bunker crew. We've got 27 members in the Patreon group right now, and it's growing. I appreciate you all. I appreciate your patience. You're all about to get that very special treat that I promised you. You know, it took some time for my wife and I to kind of get comfortable in our new place and get things set up. Things were more hectic than normal, but she has agreed for the first time ever to be on the show. She's going to make her debut. It's going to be a private recording just for the subscribers. So thank you again for your patience. We wanted to do this a couple weeks ago. But what we're going to do is her and I are going to talk about our experience at our recent stay in Cancun, and more specifically about our hotel. Speaking of trips, I just got back from a great time in New Orleans. You know, what's fun about doing the show sometimes is that walking around these different cities, you know, before it was just Vegas, I sometimes get to use my own website as a resource. It happened in Vegas a couple times, then it happened in New Orleans. I was in New Orleans for a bachelor party. My brother and I were just kind of walking around, you know, everyone was kind of doing their own thing for a little bit. So we kind of just took a leisurely stroll, kind of walking through the French Quarter, walked by Bourbon Street a little bit, just taking in the sights. And, you know, he's like, "Hey, why don't we stop and like go to a bar?" I'm like, "Oh, you know what? Let's let me pull up the list that Mark gave me." You guys might remember Mark on the New Orleans episode of the show. He's from the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. But so let me pull up the list that Mark gave me. And so, you know, I pull up the list. I'm like, "Oh, you know what? Carousel Bar sounds really, really interesting." From, you know, I remember the time that he talked about it. I'm like, "Let's look it up." Sure enough, we were about, I think we were less than 20 feet away from it at the time. We were right on Royal Street there. So we walked into Carousel Bar. It's in the Monteleone Hotel. Really, really cool space. You know, it's got the main centerpiece bar there. It does look like a carousel, as Mark said. He was not lying there. And it does spin around. And so you've got this kind of center circle where the bartender is, and that's where they're making all the drinks. And then around it, you know, the patrons are sitting around the bar, and it's of course, spinning. It's not spinning very fast. I think that would be a problem with people who are drinking there, but a really, really cool experience, definitely something to see. And it's one of those where if you just wanted to walk in and see it, take a couple pictures, it's very easy to kind of access, and they don't mind you doing that either. We were lucky enough, my brother and I, we just kind of walked up right as two people were leaving, and so we actually got to sit at the bar and enjoy ourselves. I imagine that's somewhat rare because it looked pretty packed, and you know, people were standing up waiting for that. The hotel that we stayed at is really, really neat. I'm only going to touch on a couple things here with New Orleans, but we stayed at the hotel. It's a brand new hotel, just opened in March. It's called the Eliza Jane. It's in the Hyatt Unbound collection. The reason we were staying there is, well, most of the party was staying at like a Wyndham that was nearby, but I had some Hyatt points and a free night certificate that I just, you know, I wanted to use. So I gave this a shot. I had read about it. Absolutely beautiful hotel. It's in the Central Business District, which is what Mark from Beyond Bourbon Street mentioned that he really, really liked that neighborhood, which is both walkable to Bourbon Street and the French Quarter. What's really neat about this hotel is though that it's built inside of an old newspaper office. So it's got some really unique corridors, some really cool design. It's got like, you know, a lot of blues and gold tints with some of the furnishings and things. Absolutely stunning hotel, really, really fun. And it's right now, at least, I don't know if it's going to change, you know, after, you know, maybe bookings increase because it's been open for a little while. It is priced really attractively. I think, you know, our Friday night room rate was only about $160, which is not bad. And so, you know, I think if you're going to New Orleans, you got some Hyatt points, check out the Eliza Jane. Fantastic, fantastic hotel bar. I think New Orleans has probably one of the best kind of consolidation of hotel bars in the country, right? Pretty much every hotel bar that you go to there has a really, really solid cocktail bar. You know, you're going to get some of the major chains that maybe that's not something that, you know, they're focusing on. But there are a lot of really, really great hotel bars that you can just kind of stumble into. I'm thinking of like the Ritz-Carlton is another really good one that we went to as well. So thinking of getting some food, really wanting some fresh oysters because we're in New Orleans. After we had actually kind of stumbled out of the carousel bar there, Acme Oyster House was right nearby. And that is kind of a famous, I don't want to call it tourist trap, but that might be the best term for it. It was very, very close to Carousel Bar. But I remember Mark saying that there is an Acme Oyster House in the Harris Casino, and it's pretty much the, you know, the same product, but people kind of don't know about it. And sure enough, there was a line outside of the Acme Oyster House there close to the Mount Leon Hotel. So I said, you know what, I'll just wait, because we had planned the bachelor party to go to Harris anyway. So we did. We went to Harris later on that night, got some fresh oysters at Acme Oyster House in Harris. It's kind of set up as like a, I don't know, it's like a fast casual type of place, but they were really, really good. Harris Casino there in New Orleans, fantastic. Great dealers, really fun atmosphere. A couple of us after dinner went and scouted some Pie Gow tables because the limits were pretty high. No, I mean, they weren't too high, but just high enough to be uncomfortable for some people. I think the craps tables on a Friday night were $15 and $25 minimums. Blackjack were all over 10. You know, and if you got new people in a casino, they really don't want to be spending that much money, which is understandable. So, like I said, a few of us went and scouted for some Pie Gow tables, thought, you know, this would be a really good, easy game to teach some people. Most had not played it. And we found that there was one commission-free Pie Gow table that was completely empty. So a bunch of us kind of saddled up there. We took up the entire table, and the pit boss, the dealers were great, super patient with the new players. You know, if you're a new player, you're going to commit some faux pas, like a couple guys were bringing their cards kind of close to their chest, a little bit off the table. And of course, in Pie Gow, you can, you hold the cards, you hold all seven cards there. And so, you know, that they just don't want you to bring the cards off the table. They're really polite and nice about just reminding them, you know, reminding guys just to stay off their phone or just to get up if they had to make a call or something like that. So really, really cool. And the great thing about Pie Gow, of course, again, was that, you know, I played for 2 hours. So 2 hours playing in a casino, and at Harris New Orleans, you are getting free drinks. And I was down $20. So a really, really good time. Very, very inexpensive game to play. So if you are thinking about going to a casino, or you're going on a bachelor party or a bachelorette party, whatever it is, you got friends going to Vegas, and you know, you do want to feel like you're part of the action, you still want to play with them, even though you're maybe not too comfortable with the games with high volatility and a lot of spend, Pie Gow Poker is an absolute treat to play. Really, really slow. You can get a lot of value for playing that. So definitely something to consider. You know, we did a lot of other things. Of course, we went down to Bourbon Street, hung out there. It's definitely got like a downtown Las Vegas vibe on Bourbon Street. Just a lot of fun. New Orleans is a really, really cool city. A great city if you like looking at cool architecture and having a good cocktail. So definitely think about New Orleans if you like one of those two things. But let's get to the main portion of today's show. And we're talking about a little bit about point valuation and when to use the Chase Ultimate Rewards portal for maybe booking a flight versus transferring points to one of their partners. Let's talk about first how to get evaluation. What you might see sometimes is that, you know, different blogs or travel websites, they put a certain valuation on the points for different systems or memberships, right? So they might say that American Airlines points are worth 1.5 cents a point. Chase Ultimate Rewards points are worth 1.9 cents a point. Amex is worth, I'm just making stuff up by the way, I hope no one's like writing this down and taking notes. Amex is worth, you know, 2.0 cents per point. That would just be 2 cents per point. I'd have to say the 0.0. But anyway, you kind of get the idea there. I want to read you a quote that I read recently from, I'm just going to read you the quote first. It says, quote, "I think a valuation of 2 cents per point seems appropriate," end quote. And I don't even know what membership point they were talking about there. This is a direct quote from prominent points blogger slash website, The Points Guy, which can be a really, really good reference if you ignore the abundance of credit card pushes that they have. You know, most newbies don't understand how these valuations work. And what I really love about that sentence is the keyword seems. It's clearly far from an exact science. You know, point values vary based on individual transactions. That's really what I want you to kind of understand. And so what these bloggers, these people who run these websites are doing is based on a number of different transactions that you can have or make, that's how they're coming up with this valuation, a certain number of cents per point, right? But always keep in mind that word seems that we're hearing from this very, very popular website. It's all dependent on you. I understand the desire to assign a relative value to all points in a program. Not all points are created equal, though. And as we've discussed in previous episodes, some points offer more flexibility and redemption opportunities. And that might be why some bloggers are valuing certain points higher, but it's impossible to have an accurate valuation that works for all point holders, all people holding points in that system. Take, for instance, the recent news that Korean Air will no longer be a Chase Ultimate Rewards partner. Historically, point transfers from Ultimate Rewards to Korean Air offered some really, really good value. Now, could this bring down the overall value of Chase Ultimate Rewards points? It wouldn't make sense, but all that really matters is your travel habits. If you don't have any Asia trips planned soon, or if you never, you know, transferred points to Korean Air, this is not going to affect your points at all or how much value you think you're getting out of your points. It's not going to change anything about your rewards wallet. As always, everything about the points and miles world point valuations, most notably, are based entirely on how you navigate it. So how do you value? How do you come up with a value for your particular points? It's a really easy calculation. It's you know, nothing breakthrough here. Essentially what you do, just take the cash value of your fare or your hotel room, whatever it is, divide that by the number of points that it takes, and that gets you the value in cents per point. So say the flight that we want to take costs, and we're going to remove fees and taxes and that kind of stuff, $150. And the reason we're moving tax and fees is that's usually something that you pay extra on top of the points. You pay cash for that. So let's say that the flight we want to take costs $150. Now, if I were to use United Airlines points, let's say it would cost 15,000 points. So what we do is we divide $150 by 15,000 and you get 0.01. So 1 cent per point in value. If I were to use those points for that flight, I would get 1 cent per point in value out of it. If decimals give you anxiety, simply multiply the final number by 100 so you get, you know, a nice clean one there for you. I was able recently to use 40,000 points for two tickets, which out of pocket would have cost about $720. So this gave me 1.82 cents per point in value. I just took the $720 divided by 40,000. That gave me 0.0182 or 1.82 cents. In value. I think 1 cent per point is a good anchor, as you'll earn and redeem a minimum of 1 cent per point with all rewards credit cards. At minimum, you get a credit card, you're going to get 1% cash back or 1 cent per point or 1% on all your transactions there. So that's a good anchor point. You should be getting more than 1 cent per value, ideally, out of these things, or at the very least 1 cent per point when you redeem these things. Now, what you might see from travel bloggers and things are these insanely high valuations. I've seen people with 8-9 cent per point valuations on some of the redemptions that they have. And these crazy high point valuations are had on what's called sweet spot redemptions. Now, these are typically for first or business class international fares, though flash sales and great deals can occasionally be found for domestic tickets as well. So why do full-time travel bloggers seem to find and redeem these fares with frequency? It's because, well, it's their job to do so, right? If you are doing nothing but looking for travel and traveling and trying to find these fares, you're going to find them, right? But if you're a person with a job, you know you have planned vacations, you know, sometimes a year or so in advance, you have limited opportunities to actually travel, that means you're going to have limited redemption options as well. And the likelihood that you're going to walk into one of those sweet spot deals, well, it's minimal, and that's okay. The main thing here is that you're still saving money, which is all that matters. So don't be worried about finding, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 cents per point, getting that kind of valuation out of your points, because you really got to have to be, you really have to be super flexible with your itinerary, and specifically where you're going as well. So is it something to focus on? You know, it'd be great, right? It'd be so much fun to get this insane deal. But for most people, it's really not worth worrying about too much, especially if you have limited flexibility because you have families or, you know, a job with very specific vacation rules and stuff like that. So let's talk about specifically the Chase Ultimate Rewards portal and when to use the portal. Very, very simple kind of rule of thumb here. If the loyalty program is going to charge you more than you can redeem in the portal, then redeem in the portal. Take this sample fare for a trip I'm planning in October. It's going to cost me about 12,900 points to book through Chase. This is for a one-way flight to Arizona. So it's going to cost me about 12,900 points to book through Chase. Now, if I book through United directly, meaning that I took my Chase points and transferred them to United because they are a transfer partner, If I book through United through transferring, it would cost me 15,000 United points. So what am I going to do? Well, the 12,900 points is less with Chase, so I'm just going to book with my Ultimate Rewards points and not transfer to United because it would save me, a couple thousand points there. And there, further, there are advantages to booking with Ultimate Rewards points because, in essence, this counts as a cash fare with United. So I will earn miles from United for the flight. Basically, Ultimate Rewards is paying United on my behalf for the flight. So just like if you were to book directly with United with cash and you would earn some frequent flyer points there, it's the same thing when booking through Ultimate Rewards and that portal. Now, this doesn't happen when you use an airline's native points for award booking. So if I were to transfer the 15,000 points to Chase, or sorry, not to Chase, to United, and, you know, use the points in the United web application and then book the award ticket, that's going to count as an award booking, and I'm not going to earn points for that booking. I hope that makes sense. So what does this mean? You know, it might not be worth it, you know, to book with Chase just for these kinds of features, but it is kind of a nice little perk when you do that. Another nice thing that you can do with Chase is that you can pay in any combination of points and cash. So let's say that you only have 10,000 points. Well, you're not going to be able to, you know, transfer and then, you know, book that award booking on United. Of course, you're 5,000 points short. But with Chase, you can pay with the 10,000 points and then supplement the rest in cash as well. So you got that flexibility too. So if you got limited points at your disposal, you can still get a pretty significant discount. It's important to note for the comparison that when you book an award ticket with an airline, they will usually not put you into their basic economy seat. At least none that I know of do at this point. Basic economy fares, obviously the lowest fare that you can get. It limits your opportunity to pick a seat, and they usually charge for a carry-on bag as well. You do have the option of booking basic economy, though, through the Ultimate Rewards portal. But that's an important thing to note when you're doing like your shopping comparison with points, is that, say, for this trip for United, they're going in their regular economy, their 50,000 points, not their basic economy. So when I'm doing that comparison, you have to just make that note when you're booking through Ultimate Rewards. And if you're just looking purely at, you know, what's a better deal with points. So if the fare is better with the airline transfer partner, moving points there is very, very simple. If you've never transferred points through the Chase Ultimate Rewards portal, your first step obviously is just to get an account with the program if you do not have one. Then log into your Chase Ultimate Rewards account, and that's where you'll find a transfer to travel partner kind of tab. It's right at the top. You just pick your partner of choice. It's very, very clean, very easy to follow. You'll confirm your member ID with the airline or the hotel in question, and then enter the points you want to transfer. Those are typically done in 1,000 point increments, just so you know. Travel partner transfers, wow, that's a mouthful. Travel partner transfers only unlock if you have the Sapphire Preferred or Reserve cards, those specific travel cards there. So, you know, if you've got the regular Chase Freedom, Chase Freedom Unlimited, I think that's another one, that does those do not allow you to make these transfers to the travel partners there. So you really do have to know that. The nice thing about both of those cards, though, too, the Preferred and the Reserve, is both those cards offer point advantages when booking through the portal as well. And we've talked about this. That's at a 1.25 and 1.5 cents per point, respectively, for those two cards. That's nice, too. So you know you're getting better than the 1 cent anchor point that I kind of talked to you before automatically. So if you book through the portal, travel expenses, you're either getting 1.25 cents per point or 1.5 cents per point. Though, any Ultimate Rewards point earning card, so that Freedom, the Freedom Unlimited, those cards can still be used to book travel through the portal at a flat 1 cent per point value. You just can't transfer to travel partners, and you don't get that kind of accelerated redemption opportunity there. But very, very easy to do. Just some kind of final notes here as we round out. You'll see posts and things like that, or you'll see sometimes people asking questions about buying points. And honestly, buying points from the airline or hotel in question is rarely, if ever, worth it. And I'm putting rarely there. And I'm putting that, I used air quotes just now, just in case there is some miraculous deal that comes along. But I have never, never found that to be a good use of money. You know, the whole point of this endeavor is to get something for nothing. And buying points is a complete about face and is really a pricey endeavor. You know, I see some people think, oh, I'll buy points to top off my account for redemption, right? Maybe I'm 500, 300, 400 points short. Well, if that's the case, reach out to the airline or hotel in question and ask if they will do it for you and top off their points for free. You'd actually be surprised as to how receptive they are to doing that. But I've never seen an instance where buying points is something that is a good value there. So, you know, unless something crazy happens, I would ignore that for now. But, you know, kind of the final takeaway here, as I've said before, the valuations that you see floated around is based solely on redemption opportunities. But there's also the factor of acquisition of points, right? So some points are awarded easier and more quickly than others, depending on your loyalty to different brands and your credit card strategy. So no two currencies, if we want to call them that, are exactly the same. So the one thing that frustrates me a lot, and I've talked about this in a previous episode, is that when we're doing these valuations and you see, oh, this guy thinks that Chase points are worth 2 cents a point, or this guy thinks that Starwood points are worth 3 cents a point, or whatever it is, right? They're talking about redemption, right? And how they typically spend. But you always have to think of there's two sides of this equation, and the other side of that is acquisition, as I just said. So some points are easier to gain than others, and that sometimes, unfortunately, is not, it's hard to put that into evaluation of what those points are worth. So there's one common factor about all of these points, right? That, and this doesn't muddy the waters at all. These points, all of them, do not increase in value. That's the case for most currencies, right? So use them. And it doesn't really matter how much you use them. There's no such thing as a bad deal. I don't care what any blogger says. Redeeming points for travel plans you would have otherwise used hard-earned cash for is why you started this education in the first place. Could you find more efficient uses for your miles? Absolutely you can. It happens all the time. I go back and I can see, oh, I could have done X, Y, or Z, and I could have gotten just a little bit better deal. It doesn't matter. Sometimes it takes more work. Sometimes it means that you got to take a non-connecting flight. You figure out what you want to do, use your points for that. As long as you feel comfortable with the transaction, that's all that matters. If you get something for nothing, you've done your job, and that's what you want to do. Whew, all right. That was a mouthful. I think it's really, really tough to kind of talk about this. On podcast form, I'm, of course, going to put up the notes from this episode as well and kind of a full transcript as well. Because sometimes it can be hard to follow, especially when we're throwing numbers and things around there. But I hope this episode makes sense. So if it doesn't make sense to you, if you're like, you know, I need another go at it, or you want to follow along and read along with it, this will be up on the website, travelfanboy.com as well. And if you want to kind of get a little more of a push in your miles and points education there. One group, something I'm enjoying right now, is the Award Travel 101 group on Facebook. You just go to Facebook and in their search area there, put in Award Travel 101. I love this group. It's run by Richard Kerr. It's about 45,000 members strong, right? And I think a little bit more than that. Richard Kerr was a speaker at Zorkfest. Very, very knowledgeable in the points and miles world. And you might think, oh my gosh, 45,000 members, this is going to be intense. It's not. It's a no judgment zone. Very patient people. They also have some really great weekly discussions on maximizing points and things like that, talking about, you know, maybe where to travel next, and people can kind of give their insight. It's really, really good. You know, a lot of these travel forums, these travel groups, they can be a little bit intense. I'm going to be honest with you. They can sometimes be filled with people having some pretty strong and sometimes harsh opinions about what other people are doing. And so it's good to find a group or some people that kind of make you feel comfortable about it. You feel good asking questions and being a little bit vulnerable there. So, and Award Travel 101 is definitely a good group as well. Don't be afraid to lean on me. I'm, of course, still learning as well. But finding some people in the scene that you really, really like. Be sure to check that out, though. Until next time, thank you so much for listening. Safe travels. Be good to each other.